Welcome to the EISJ podcast series. This series is dedicated to keeping you up to date with what is happening here at EISJ, and also discusses key themes which are important within our community.
Hello and welcome to our Facebook Live and podcast event. I've got here coordinators from Meadows and Jumeirah, and one of the things we're going, well, the main thing we're going to be looking at is what are the benefits of being an IB learner in our school's context. I think it's a really important question. There are a number of questions we get on tours about the differences between IB and other curriculums and why IB is a preferred curriculum. And so we are seeking to answer that through today's session. So I'll just go round, might as well introduce everybody first. I think that's probably a sensible thing to do. So if I just go around the table, I'm Mr. Ellis, I'm the principal here at Jumeirah. To my left is?
Hi, I'm Miss Jo, and I'm the DP coordinator at Meadows.
Hi, I'm Nashi Narif, and I'm the DP coordinator at EIS Jumeirah.
And hello, I'm Steve Wellman, the MYP coordinator at EIS Jumeirah.
Hello, I'm Liz Weeks, I'm the assistant MYP coordinator at Jumeirah.
Hi, I'm Scott Kirkland, I'm the PYP coordinator at Jumeirah.
Hi, I'm Sumaya Sharif, PYP coordinator at Meadows.
Hello, I'm Sarah Robson, and I am the MYP coordinator at EIS Meadows.
Fantastic. So now we've got everyone introduced, we can get into the meat of this discussion. And then we go straight away to Scott about what is an IB education.
IB education, it's transferable. It moves beyond just content. And being an international curriculum, it means that it's more skills-based. So I can take those skills and I can move around the world. So it's not locked into just one curriculum. You look at it as more of a framework that will be laying on top of your local contents. Now, when we look at that transferability, we start to focus in more upon skills. And it's those skills that help that continuum that run through the learning. So the approaches to learning, ATL skills, that we have in PYP, they move all the way through into MYP up into DP. And that's that common thread that runs through, along with our learner profiles. And they're a mainstay for all IB curriculums around the world. It's not something that we get to pick and choose whether we do or we don't. That's something that has to be taught explicitly and implicitly all the way through all three programs, which makes it more of a continuum. So it's not just year upon year, I finish, I move on, I finish, I move on. It's a continuum of learning that stretches through all three programs. Now, one of the main components that sets an IB education apart is that action, because action has to take place in all units of inquiry. It's not something that's just tacked on as an add-on. It's core to all three phases of an IB curriculum. Now, within PYP, we have action within every unit. And at the end, we'll have our PYP exhibition where the students are taking action on a real-world context. And then we go up into MYP, and that action becomes more highly focused when we start looking at the personal project and we start thinking about the service in action program they have there. And it's where they start to take on real responsibilities. Now, this is completely different to other curriculums around the world because it's not just, oh, you need to go and do something. It's a core part of it. The core part of the curriculum and the core part of the learning that runs all the way through, all the way up into DP. Now,
well, actually, Scott, whilst there's a little pause in here, take a bit of a breath. Just, I think one of the things that parents do have an issue with when they meet IB schools is some of the terminology. So if we clear up some of those, you're talking about PYP, MYP, DP, CP, the whole sort of thing, we tend to use these acronyms very straightforwardly and sort of sometimes assume other people know what we mean. But if you just run through what you mean by those sort of terms and as you move forward, we'll continue to try and highlight those for people.
Well, your ATLs is your approaches to learning, and that looks at your skills. So they were looking at social skills, communication skills, thinking skills, research skills, and my favorite, self-management. And then we've got our learner profiles, and the 10 learner profiles of who we want our students to be. Now, when we look at PYP, it's your primary years program. Then we look at MYP, and it's your middle years program. We have DP, which is your diploma program, and CP, which is your careers related program. And they're all different pathways that students can come into and out of. So it's got that flexibility because it's not locked into content. When we think about students coming in halfway through a PYP program, they can come in seamlessly because it's not locked into the content. It's the skills that we instill in the students and the skills that become part of that learning that get developed. And that's how they continue to keep moving forward.
Okay, I think that's a really good point. And I think I'll come back to something, as Scott said, as a principal, you know, one of the things that we have to do as a school is we have to register our curriculum and we get inspected in our curriculum offerings to ensure that we meet those ATLs and meet all the different elements of IB at different age groups. And that's actually part of our major inspection process. So Ms. Nasheen, I know, is, I'll put her a bit on the spot. She's somebody who's very, very familiar with the IB inspection process. How do they actually look at our curriculum? What sort of things are they looking for?
They're looking for whether we meet all their learning objectives in terms of all the ATL skills, whether we are introducing skill development along with our curricula, the development of the core, and again, the development of the learner profile attributes, which are linked heavily embedded in the curriculum. Those are the biggest advantages of an IB curriculum because our students, and what the IB want to see is that students develop not only academically, but also holistically. And that is one of the mainstays of the IB exhibition, of the IB curriculum.
Can I just add as well to that, that in the inspection process when we get evaluated, what they're also looking for is progress and attainment. They do want to see that our students are making progress from year one all the way up to year 13. And they will check that we're meeting minimum standards for those for that progress.
I think that's a really good point because that's another thing that comes up in tours is, you know, we talk about IB, we talk about all the fantastic stuff, and I know Scott there talked about you know, about the skills and the skills development. We do have an underpin in the UAE, it's traditionally actually the UK curriculum, but more so an international curriculum, which does underpin. There are sort of national age standards that we keep and we use that just to keep a guide on our curriculum, as do IB. But I think the important thing there is that IB do make sure that we meet all those elements. So all the things you're going to hear about the benefits now as you move on to that side, yeah, these are accredited. We're an accredited IB school, and so IB have come in and say, yes, you do this really well. So just go on to back to Ms. Nasheen, actually, you know, global recognition, the benefits of IB.
Yes. Again, to add on to what my colleague Joe has said, another important thing about IB education is whether that all programs tie in with one another, and we as a school work collaboratively with all the four programs with each other. Now, the IB programs itself are globally recognized, which gives them a biggest advantage. Universities love the IB program because of the skills that students develop in terms of strong academic skills, along with life skills such as research skills, thinking skills, critical thinking skills, which make an IB learner stand out at university. We at Emirates International Schools have extensive experience in offering all the IB programs, and it's actually music to our ears when our students, our alumni, come back and tell us how they stand out at university because their writing skills and their research skills give them a distinct advantage over their peers. They are not shocked to write a 1,000-word essay because they've done 4,000 words at the school. Mm-hmm. And these are the distinctive the advantages that they experience because they are ready for life, for university and beyond.
Sounds very, very good. I'm going to pass on to just see my notes here. Here we go, Samaya. Can you talk about skills-driven ATL's learner profile?
Absolutely, Nasheen. And if I can just follow on from that, it's not only in the high school that our students become those active learners. We prepare them from as young as 3 years old. And with the enhanced PYP curriculum, we take those learners into active learning from as young as 3 years old, where they get to lead their entire journey right through when they leave us in the PYP, the primary years program, where they get to create their own unit of inquiry, a bespoke 6-week unit where children actually take the initiative, look at what's currently happening in the world, see how they can make that change and implement their learning. And of course, taking action, as Scott had mentioned, is the ultimate whole notion of the PYP, and our learners get to do that all on their own with the guidance of their mentors, their teachers, and the community, which is the crux of the importance of the Primary Years program, involving the entire community, and then preparing them for the MYP, which is the Middle Years program. And very importantly, we look at those gaps, what is prevalent, what is what we're looking for in the community. And then with our continuum, we're continuously speaking to our colleagues in the MYP, the Middle Years Program, preparing those children for year seven and beyond. And my colleague Sarah will be able to follow through on that in the way we narrow those gaps in preparation for the high school.
Yeah, thank you, Sumaya. So when we have students transfer into our Middle Years program from our primary program at AIS, we don't do this as a standalone program. We have a 3 to 18 continuum. So students can enter the program at any point, but we have lots of students at AIS who will start with us in the primary years and will continue their education through to the diploma program. And now at AIS, we've done lots of work about ensuring that we have a spiral curriculum. What that essentially means for our learners is that they will build the foundations in the primary program, for example, in maths and algebra. And every year we will revisit that that unit of work, that learning, but we will build on that to make it more in depth and a more rigorous program as they go through into diploma, preparing them for their end of year exams in year 11 and in year 13. So it's not a repetitive program. It is a program where we will revisit learning and we will continue to build on those skills of inquiry, of research, but we ensure that students are continually revisiting and developing the skills in more depth as they move through. So the when we look at the middle years program, for example, we're not going back and just continually revisiting the work, where we're making it more challenging and we're making it more appropriate for the age that students are as they move through the continuum from 3 to 18.
It's one of the things I think parents need to understand as well, that obviously PYP feeds into the middle years, feeds into diploma, but students shouldn't, or parents shouldn't, be put off by coming from a non-IB background. You know, in all of our programs, we spend a lot of time making sure that skill development is at the forefront, and we will pick up gaps in knowledge from other areas and ensure that students actually get through. So it does create a huge amount of flexibility within the program. It's not all sort of one direction, is it? Children can find their own pathway almost. Steve?
So each program follows on naturally from the other. They're cohesive, they're well-structured. What draws them together, what lies at the core of each program, are the global contexts, which allow students to become internationally minded as they explore different areas, different global themes and contexts. We also have the approaches to learning, the ATL skills, which again drive and lie at the core of each program. But what is interesting is many of our students follow the full continuum. They will start in the early years, work through primary, middle years, and either the diploma or career-related program. Each has its challenges, but the students can thrive with each program. And what I find interesting as well is there is flexibility within each program to meet the needs of individual students. So for example, a student with a learning difficulty, they could follow a different pathway. A student with a learning challenge who might be new to English, again, they can have a bespoke pathway put together for them. So the curriculum is tailored to meet the needs of the individuals, but the vast majority will follow the full program. For example, when you get to the diploma, the DP students, if they wish, they could study literature in their home language. We have challenge, for example, in mathematics, where students can do extended mathematics. So the program allows every student to succeed and thrive.
And actually, we, in both the schools, we get a significant number of our students achieving bilingual certificates, which means they've studied not only English to a high level, but also their home language. Interesting, this year we've talked to people being able to take Russian as
Japanese.
A bilingual certificate, Japanese,
Turkish.
So anything, really. Yeah. You know, if we can, you know, the IB program is that flexible all the way through that they will get, normally in most curriculums, they wouldn't get really anything for being that bilingual, and IB really does. So say, yeah, this is type, yeah, these are the types of learner. In an international setting, bilingual learners will gain credit for all of that. So just whilst we're on that, the benefits of an IB, I just want to throw one question open. So if a parent's now listening, thinking, okay, that's, you know, that's what we want, that's the sort of thing, should they be concerned about moving them from Indian curriculum, British curriculum, Australian, New Zealand, South African curriculum, and suddenly bring them into an IB school? Are they... are the children going to be able to survive?
The students adapt very quickly. It's a motivational program, and it's designed to provide interest to every student.
Yeah, what I would jump in thinking about, we have a number of students, given our context in Dubai, that do move in and out of the country in different educational and curriculums. What I would say with the middle years program and diploma and primary years program is that when students transfer in, it's the IB is not a curriculum as such. There is no set topic list of what we have to teach in middle years and primary diplomas, a bit more set in preparation for university. But we can enhance students' strengths and knowledge by overlaying it with the skills. So an example of this would be in history. In the middle years programme, we have to teach our students knowledge of peace and conflict as part of their history curriculum. How we teach that and what example of peace and conflict can be totally adaptable for our teacher strengths, for our student strengths. So if a student is coming in, having studied in the British curriculum, for example, and they have knowledge of peace and conflict within that setting, that doesn't mean they just leave that behind. They can bring that with them and apply it to the exam. The exam at the end of Year 11 allows for total flexibility because this is a global programme. Students can study any example of geography, any example of poetry. So our teachers will use examples of Emirati poetry, but a student studying the IB in America may study American poetry, but they all will sit the same exam at the end of Year 11. So it has complete flexibility for students who are transferring from a different curriculum into our curriculum that they can bring that previous learning with them. They don't need to leave it behind. What will happen is we will develop the skills to be able to analyse poetry and to compare it to other examples. So it's not just leaving the curriculum behind that they've studied, it's about adapting it and putting it into the skills framework that is set by the IB.
It takes it to that conceptual level. So we're teaching, like you're saying, through peace and conflict, their concepts.
Yeah.
And I can teach those concepts through different pieces of content. So what is really meaningful over in one area of the world and is relevant and real may be completely different. But the two concepts of peace and conflict, that's the understanding we want the children to have. So it kind of shifts things from that content-driven to that conceptual understanding. And I can now apply that concept to different areas of learning, and I can transfer that to different curriculums. And that's where I think a lot of the power of being an IB learner comes from.
Can I?
Sorry, I'm just going to interrupt just a minute. And I think that's, yeah, a really good point, and a good way for people who struggle with the idea of an IB and how we, it's a conceptual thing, is that things like history and geography, mm-hmm. in that, you know, if we're in the UK, and me growing up doing geography, and I know, you know, Miss Liz over there, geography teacher, you know, we did the crop rotations, we did, you know, rivers and all this sort of thing. Well, you know, let's look around us, yeah. Here in the UAE, not that many rivers, to be fair, that, well, maybe a few thousand years ago there were, but at the moment, not many rivers, yeah. And so, but we have to meet the needs of the locality, really, and really put it into that local concept. But we also don't forget what people bring from other countries, because what's central in both of our missions as schools is this, you know, making global citizens that can really do that. which then passed me neatly on to the idea, you know, when they get through this process, this fantastic IB process, you want to be sure as a parent, where they're going to go next. Now, I know it's about, I think the rate of something like 10 to 20, so 12% seems to hit my head of more success rate for IB learners at university than other ones. So, Joe, you were going
to
say?
There has been some research done on attainment for students at undergraduate who have done IB curriculum as opposed to other curriculums. And the research has shown, one, that there's a certain percentage will get a higher attainment as compared to other programs at school level. But the other thing that I find really interesting is that the dropout rate for IB students has been found to be a lot lower than for students from other curriculums. And I think that from my own experience, from dealing with the students, from dealing with my own kids who've been through the program, and from dealing with students who've come back and speaking to those alumni, and I think Norshin would agree, the students that have come back and they have done really well, they're telling us that the reason that they've done well, the reason that they didn't drop out, the reason they were so engaged at university is because they had all of these skills that all of my colleagues here have been talking about, the learner profile skills. They're able to collaborate, they're able to take risks, they're good at research, they're good at the practical things that have to be done to be a successful university student. And so IB is, in my opinion, the best preparation for higher education, whichever country they choose to go to. Norshin, did you want to talk about where some of our students have gone to?
Yes. Our students have moved on to some of the top-ranking universities in the world. We've had students who've gone to Oxford, to Cambridge, to several universities in the US as well. I would say that we've had a number of students who have completed other curricula and come back to do the diploma program very successfully, bringing their skills in subjects from those curricula and easily making that transition to the diploma program, and again to study visual arts, to study communication qualifications. In fact, this year as well, we have about 9 students who have moved on from other curricula who have transitioned into our school and are extremely successful. In addition, we have about 10% of students who also stay on in the UAE and study at universities here, and they are able to meet those conditions.
That's also
for equivalency.
That became more popular, obviously, during COVID, as parents didn't want to send their sons and daughters thousands of miles away and then possibly get stuck. So staying in the country in which the parents were living became a much more popular option than it had been in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been globally recognised as it. And I can remember a reasonable amount of time ago that IB wasn't recognised so highly as it is now in terms of each national system, but now it's ranked up there, isn't it? And, talking, say, the point scale at diploma is up to 45 points. If you're getting 38 plus, 40 plus points, that's pretty much guaranteed entry to any university in the world. And with the broad range of subjects that you maintain, it gives you a huge access to an array of subjects. It's not so thinned down into one area. So what makes an outstanding IB learner, Liz?
I mean, there's been discussion about the IB learner profile, and I think that underpins all the phases. We want our children to come out of each phase knowing more than they did before, having more skills than they did prior, making progress, but it's being able to demonstrate that and how they go about it. So we want our children to be inquirers. I think that's been mentioned as well. We want them to be able to be independent and with structure, investigating things independently. Being critical thinkers, I think, is so important in society that we're in at the moment. Our children have a deluge of information from the internet, online. You know, they've got to be able to be to understand or look at a piece of writing or a piece of information and say, where's this piece of information come from? Is it reliable? What's the motivation behind it? Who wrote it? You know, to have some, not just to absorb everything that they're given, but question it. And what's the motivation behind it, and how will it affect whatever their learning question might be. But we want our children to be principled. We want to continue with the good work, you know, that's been done at home with parents. We want the children to make the right decisions. We want our students to be good people. We want them to have principles to take action. We've obviously mentioned before about the service programme and them taking agents for change in their community, empowered children that can go on and make a difference or feel that they can make a difference in their community. I think that is really important. And a safe space to take risks, to make mistakes, you know, to learn from those mistakes, to be adventurous, to feel that they can do those things. And that's how we learn, by taking those risks. So I think the learner profile is you know, our guide for what we would say makes a superb IB student.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the big things you said at the beginning. Yeah, this is really at the core, regardless of which program you're in, the learner profiles are really at the core of that and creating the environment where they can experience all those learner profiles, develop in all those areas, take risks. And we talk a lot about, I just want to clear this up, we talk a lot about student agency. Liz, do you want to define student agency? Because it's a term I think we use in tours, it's a term we use in our literature, but maybe not something which links to learner profiles, yeah, but not particularly well understood.
I think it kind of runs through various aspects of the curriculum, through subjects, through their services action, through their interdisciplinary units, which obviously we'll go on to talk about shortly. But it's about making change for the future. You know, so they can talk about, you know, they're very often as part of whatever we do with them, where we give them a sort of problem. It could be something linked to a sustainable development goal, or it could be something linked to something in their community. But we need to be able to, yes, they can research it, they can talk about that problem, but we want them to make that step forward from there and actually, you know, participate in their community or in a wider setting to make some change in order for, you know, future generations. It's all about, you know, what are we doing for the future sustainably to make changes in our community, for our environment, for society.
Yeah, that student agency and making that, being that agent of change. I think some parents see that, you know, as their child gets older, it's, you know, yeah, it's easy to see they're a bit more mature, they're able to do it. So Samaya, yeah, what's that look like in PYP? You know, when we've got a six-year-old, how can they be an agent of change?
You know, absolutely. Agents for change happen as young as 3 years old. Learning about plants, learning about the environment, what that child can do to better improve themselves, their community. It starts as simple as play. So how can we do that in terms of introducing play, introducing their learner profile attribute of being caring and being risk takers in the environment? And that's something we introduce as young as three, as I said. Takes us all the way up into the PYP, the Primary S program, where those children actually become those agents for change, leading their learning, investigating why we need to impact in a particular topic. What do I need to improve the environment, to improve myself as well as my neighbor in the community? And introducing that, drip feeding it as little as 3, 4, 5 years old, gives those children the opportunity to, yes, I can make a little difference each year until I get to the stage where I'm able to impact in the work environment, provide economically, and say to myself, yes, I've learned that all the way through the continuum in the IB. So it's never too early.
Yeah, I think sometimes we get that back from our parents, don't we? Mm-hmm. Them saying, our kids keep coming back saying, why do you do it like that? Why do we do this? Why don't we do this? And they get that real sort of bashing from their own children about, yeah, because they want to change within the sphere of experience that they have. And I think that's really important. Jo, IB learners, outstanding?
I think all IB schools will promote that an outstanding IB learner is somebody who's internationally minded. We're trying to help develop and create skills in young people that make them global citizens. This is the vision and mission of the IB, the International Baccalaureate Organisation, and it is definitely one of the underpinning philosophies that as a school we've adopted. It's really important that our students are global citizens and that they do have tolerance and understanding of other cultures. We're really fortunate at both of the EIS schools to have a large, large number of different nationalities attending the school. So there's experience of so many different cultures are coming through and coming through in that learning. One of the ways that IB does this is that it requires every student to learn a second language. And one of the ways that people can access and start to understand other people's cultures and become tolerant of other people's cultures is through language. And so language is at the core of the learning throughout the three IB programs. And IB promote teachers as language learners and language teachers. For all of us that teach at EIS, it doesn't matter what our subject specialisms are or what level we teach at and in what phase, we are all language teachers, all of us, because we all teach students who have multiple languages. Some have English as a first language, some as a second, a third, a fourth, or fifth language even. And we draw on these experiences and these skills that the students have. So the idea is that we send them out into the world as global citizens who will continue to be agents of change, and they will continue to have an impact on their local communities wherever they may be.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I would add into that as well, I might throw this out as a little bit, but yeah, for anybody else to chip in, it's within that international mindedness and global citizenship, within the IB, it's not just about having a range of different nationalities, but it's how we use that in the classroom. So Scott, let me throw that question over to you. How do we actually use those different nationalities to enhance our learning? Rather than just sit there and say, oh yeah, we've got 20 different nationalities in my classroom, or 50 or whatever it may be, and therefore we've got international minded students.
So even when we look at some of the units that we cover within the primary use program, when we look at where we are in place and time, when we start going back and we start pulling on the backgrounds of all the different students within that learning environment, and like we were talking before, about conceptual learning, conceptual understanding. They're going to be bringing in different contexts to that learning. Now, if we look at, look at the explorers, we then look at, we've got a lot of Emirati students within Jumeirah. So we then start looking at, okay, what's that local context? What's your background? So we then start pulling in all of that understanding. So we've got other students who from different parts of the world, they're now bringing in not just language that they're developing, but also bringing in a cultural understanding about the area that they're living in. We've got students from around, from Europe. So we start bringing in the context of European explorers. We've got a few Australian children. We have a couple of Australian explorers come in. So it's that cultural background that they're going to bring into the classroom. So they are coming in as experts at their level, which they can then share, which develops that understanding of different cultures from around the world.
I think as well, and Liz touched on it earlier, the interdisciplinary units, and this I think drives into that as well. You know, when we're developing students who are internationally minded and global citizens, we're very fortunate in the three IB programs to have interdisciplinary units, because as Liz said earlier prior to the discussion, I think you said learning doesn't take place in a box, does it? So, and I completely agree. And I think that, you know, sometimes we'll put units together that are interdisciplinary, say with, say, we've done one at EISM that was maths and Arabic. And so we put a unit together that they could study at MYP level, and they looked at Arabic mathematicians, historical Arabic mathematicians. And it was great because then we started bringing history in as well. And it just...
Mr. Al-Habra from my teaching day. He was the Arabic man who was the first one who to write about algebra, hence the word algebra.
Yeah, and again, this is developing that international mindedness, that global thinking, using language, but also using our other disciplines as well. I think that interdisciplinary learning throughout the three programs is key to creating an outstanding IB.
It's a thematic approach.
Exactly.
Rather than a topic that I'm going to teach you about, we're going to run through this thing.
The theme, exactly.
And it's that theme and where all those threads come in from all of the content, the skills, the learner profiles, where are they all fitting into this thing?
And what's the investigation? And I think that's, as people are saying, we're looking about what does the child and their background bring.
Exactly.
Because all of our upbringings of everyone in this room, but you think about the 80-odd different cultures that we have across the schools, people living, some people that lived here all their lives but are not Emirati, some people that have come here for a year or two and then they're going, their backgrounds affect their decision making, doesn't it?
and therefore, yeah, and how they think about things. It's always funny when you go into a PYP classroom and they're talking about the weather. And actually, those students who've actually grown up here, you know, the weather is, well, what's the weather today? You know, I can remember growing up in primary school, yeah, we'd be marked what the weather was every day, part of our science and literacy and things. And here it's, you know, what's the weather today? It's sunny. You know, what's it going to be in 15 weeks' time? Well, it's going to be sunny and hot. And but there are other children in there who understand different seasons and what that brings. And when you talk to them about what weather means, you know, if I come from somewhere like Scots from Australia, you know, Melbourne, you can have all four seasons in one day.
Yeah.
That, you know, how you make decisions on weather and things like that does come from your background.
That word season. We did a fabulous observation where it was with the year twos and they were looking at seasons within science, and that discussion came up about what does this word mean, and the year two students were pulling it apart, and the big question is, well, what is a season? And one little girl put her hand up and she went, it's a set of TV shows. And very true. They went on to football seasons and they went to cricket season, and they broke it down to a season is a length of time. And it can be applied in all these different ways. And these were year two kids that came up. And within the science concept, it was a season is spring, summer, autumn, winter. And that was the content they had to know. But they could now use this term season as part of an understanding that was to be transferred across different learning areas. And I just sat back and was like, wow, you guys are incredibly clever.
Yeah, and I think that's a key strength of both of the schools, is that our teachers are IB teachers. You know, we are a core IB three-weighting curriculum. That is the only curriculum that we have. All of our teachers are very skilled at bringing in this interdisciplinary learning and being able not to put learning into the box. So not thinking, right, we really need to stay on track with going down the seasons of weather. We can actually explore this and bring the inquiry into the classroom and allowing students the free space to be able to do that, and not shutting those discussions and inquiry-led sort of lessons. And the way that we've done that is all of our teachers are IB teachers. We do not go between two different curriculums, you know, and we don't have British curriculum, for example, running alongside it. We take elements of the curriculum from the UK, from America, and from Australia, and we feed that into the knowledge. But because we are fully IB trained, as it's a requirement of the IB for every teacher within the context to be fully trained as an IB teacher, and we have those skills as teachers to be able to open those discussions, to lead the inquiry that we want to happen in the classroom, but not to put it into a box, not to say, right, we're going down this one path and that's how we're going to plan our lesson. We are flexible because of the training that we've had, and to ensure we're supporting students with their own inquiry.
Yeah, I think I like that, Sarah, that you we can broaden that, and the IB can't be put into a box. Yeah, no. This is we're talking about the differences and what makes IB special. So, yeah, but we can't put it all into this one little contained podcast box. But I thought we're getting towards the end. I think we've been, yeah, it's been a really, really good discussion that we've had, and hopefully you've got a lot out of it at home there. But I'm going to just go around, and there's one question I'm going to ask, because I'm going to make a bit of an assumption, it's a leap of faith, I think, that none of us probably went to an IB school or did an IB as a student. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Right, so let's think, yeah, we've had a good discussion about what IB is about, the benefits. If you could transport yourself back as a school student, whether it be a primary, whether it be a high school student, whatever age group it may be that you can go back to, what do you think you would have liked the most as a child about the IB? What would have excited you the most about IB? So I'll go around the same way we introduced each other, and there's the question. For me, I'll give people a bit of a chance to think. I think, you know, for me, that at the core we talk about the service as action, we talk about learner profiles, we talk about, you know, this going out and doing things. And I was a child that liked to do things. And it was fantastic. I did lots of things. Went to a very good school, did loads and loads of things. I think I would have really enjoyed actually having a certificate at the end or qualification which really demonstrated that I did that, because that was something I was really passionate about, is doing that community work, sports and everything like that, and that student agency and making a difference. Unfortunately, you know, it's not relegated, it's part of my CV when I was that age, but to actually have that diploma certificate which says I've been a diploma at Ivy School and I've been stamped as having those qualities, I think would have really benefited me. Hopefully that's given you enough time to think. So we're going around with Joe. Just, I only want something really sort of short. I was a bit longer to try and keep you some time. Something short.
Very, very quickly, for me, it would have been the breadth of choice across the programmes, because I was one of these students who didn't really know what I wanted to do at 16 years old or at 14 years old. And so having lots of subject options and keeping that breadth, keeping doors open for me would have been really good.
I would have loved to have something like TOK in my curriculum, because I think it gives students those critical thinking skills which are valued both at work and, you know, and again at university. To have that would have been a boon.
I mean, it's two things. One would be the languages, communication, the fact that, you know, throughout the PYP and the MYP programs, students learn three languages as they work through to the diploma or CP. They have reached a high level of proficiency in languages, but also the personal projects, you know, the skills that that brings to students and what they develop during that period.
I think as a geographer, and geography was always my favourite subject anyway when I was in school, I think the freedom, obviously, that the teachers have to explore different parts of the world whilst sort of tying it in with the local community means that here, you know, you can explore the most exciting case studies and the most engaging earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, whatever it might be, as well as obviously local case study examples of other things. And I think in other curriculums, perhaps we were tied to the local river, let's say, or the local beach. And I think sort of the freedom of the curriculum to go and look at exciting things would have been great.
That, you know, that exploring, to be able to explore more, to be able to inquire more, to follow my own paths of interest. Again, I go back to the exhibition and being able to make my own choices about what I want to go and inquire into and be able to ask questions that are important to me, not what someone else is telling me is important. And I can then start mapping my own path and setting my own goals.
I'd have to echo your thoughts there, Scott, as a PYP, fervent believer in the PYP. I think if someone had to ask me at the age of 11, can you plan your own unit of learning for a six-week period, anything you'd like, that would have been phenomenal. Coming from a background in South Africa and being really rigid in our curriculum and our focus, as all of us were in our schooling, that would have been a phenomenal opportunity. So definitely the exhibition is the highlight of the Primary S program for me.
For me, it would be the preparation for real-world situations. Think about the, I come from British curriculum, and we would be taught maths as a subject and then English as a subject and science as a separate subject. But actually, in real-world situations and problems, it's not confined to one subject area. So that interdisciplinary understanding, because once, you know, we enter the world of work, we know as teachers, and I'm sure any parents listening know within their world of work, it's not one sort of curriculum area that they apply on a day-to-day basis. It is the interdisciplinary, you know, using math skills, English skills, language skills, artistic and creative skills. So it's that pulling together of all of the curriculums into all of the subjects into one interdisciplinary curriculum to prepare for the world of work that would have been, you know, feel would have been really beneficial to myself.
Okay, so thank you all for joining the session online. Thank the coordinators for giving their really insightful input into IB and what makes it the best curriculum choice for your children. Should you wish to come and visit the schools, contact our registrar's office. And if you want to see one of the stars that's sitting around the table with me today, you know, they'll be more than happy to go into more depth and answer more of your questions on the IB diploma. Yeah, it is there for all children. It's the best pathway that you can wish for your child, that's going to set your children up for the future. And I think that last section, you'd hear from each person you know, those different things that they would have enjoyed are all the things as a parent that you should want for your child's education. And we're here at Emirates International Schools to supply that in the community. So give us a shout and come and join us. Thank you very much, everybody.
All of our podcasts are available via Podbean. The links can be found via our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter account. Just look for us at Emirates International School, Jumeirah. Thank you for listening.